Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, it's Dr. Toni, and I am here to really discuss some really, you know, some tough topics, but also a really important topic to talk about. I'm here with Dr. Christina Bjorndal to really discuss her personal experience and about dealing with mental health challenges and struggles growing up and moving into motherhood with those mental health challenges. Dr. Christina Bjorndal is a licensed naturopathic doctor. She's an established keynote speaker on how to regain your mental health using a naturopathic approach. She is the co-founder of Natural Terrain. It's a naturopathic clinic in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And she is the author of the books Beyond the Label, 10 Steps to Improve Your Mental Health with Naturopathic Medicine, and The Essential Diet, Eating for Mental Health. Her books, her courses, her workshops really can teach you how to regain your mental health using a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual approach to health, especially if you have been recently diagnosed with a mental illness or if you are struggling in life. So thanks so much for joining me, Dr. Chris. I really appreciate it. I was really struck by the openness and the honesty around your personal experience with mental health in your book, Beyond the Label. And as soon as I started reading it, I knew that I wanted to have a conversation with you and share it with all of those people out there listening right now, too. So thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me and for reading the book. I really appreciate it.
Well, I think it's an amazing read, and it can really open up a lot of people's eyes around mental health. Even those people, again, even as a practitioner, as a naturopathic doctor myself, who supports my patients with mood issues, I just really appreciated your candidness. You know, there's a huge stigma around mental health and mental health issues. You've dealt with it for most of your life, and being able to share your experience and your successes to really know that it can be done. You've done a lot of work to get to where you are right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it's been a bit of a journey, that's for sure.
Do you feel comfortable? Would you mind sharing a little bit about your journey as much as you'd like to with the people listening right now?
Yes, of course. So it's funny. One of the things we're taught in naturopathic medicine is always to ask, you know, when did things begin? You know, when did that first happen? You know, what was going on in your life when you first started to feel a certain way? And sometimes it's hard to pinpoint, right? Mm-hmm. So initially, I usually say for myself that it started off in high school, and I developed an eating disorder at that time. And then I got into university, and I found myself in a place that I'd never been before, which was experiencing suicidal ideations and depression. I didn't know that's what I was experiencing, but when I went to the doctor, she said, you know, this is depression and anxiety. And so I was put on an antidepressant, which I took. And then a few months after that, I found myself in another place that I'd never been before, which was spiraling out of control into a psychotic manic episode. And at that point, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1. And another thing I had never heard of before. And so I didn't really accept that diagnosis. I wasn't really having anything to do with it. So what I did instead is I continued to march through the world wearing this mask that, you know what, I'm okay on the outside, but actually I wasn't doing that well on the inside. And so I just would always continue this overachieving behavior of pushing myself and trying to, you know, excel and succeed in life. And when I graduated, I ended up working in the corporate world and continued this overachieving behavior, again, all the while wearing this mask. Most of the time, I was struggling on the inside, but I didn't want anybody to know. And I think that's a really important point, because a lot of people are wearing a mask. And it eventually caught up to me, and I had a suicide attempt. It left me in a coma with kidney failure. I was on dialysis and was told I would need a kidney transplant. And when I came out of that coma, I certainly wasn't happy about the fact that, you know, I'm an overachiever. I'm like, my goodness, what the heck, eh? Why? I mean, I know we're not supposed to joke about suicide, but for me, I was like, oh, come on. Like, you know. So
I think if anyone could joke about suicide, it's, you know, if you've had the experience, you can go for it.
Yeah. So, but the thing that opened my eyes, though, was a book that one of my friends gave me to read by Marianne Williamson, in her book, A Return to Love. And there was a quote in this book on surrendering. And this quote goes along these lines, that surrender is not about breaking out of anything, but it's a gentle melting into who you really are. So you let down your armor and you discover that all God needs is one sincere, surrendered moment where love matters more than anything and nothing else really matters at all. And so for me, the word that really impacted me in that quote was this word love. Mm-hmm. Because I did not love myself. I didn't accept who I was. And this then stems back to even further than high school. This stems back to, I think, an earlier trauma for me, which is adoption. So for me, that early event that happened in my life and learning that I was adopted and the way that I processed that to mean inside of me was that I wasn't wanted. And so the way I operated in the world was to overcompensate and overachieve in order to sort of to earn my place, if you will. And of course, this isn't all happening on a conscious level. This is all happening in the recesses of our subconscious mind. So when I'm lying there in this, you know, ICU bed with being a little bit angry, a lot angry that I was still here, I had to figure out a different way to navigate my health. And then I came across naturopathic medicine. And so I started down that road and, you know, putting in these nutritional building blocks is where it started for me. And I eventually had a year where I felt free of depression and anxiety. And I hadn't really had that in the 15 years prior. And so I knew that there was something to this approach. And I also knew at that time, there weren't a lot of people that were practicing mental health from a naturopathic perspective. And so it was really hard to get help at that time. So that's when I decided to go back to school, and here I am. So that's the journey in a nutshell.
Well, I'm glad you weren't successful.
Oh, thank you.
Back then, so that you could be here with us now to really, I mean, your impact and on the world and on your colleagues and on the greater public out there to be able to have these conversations from a real place of knowing and a real place of experience, I think is just so key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think we were talking earlier about vulnerability and, you know, mentioning Brené Brown. And I really feel that that's that's a big shift that's happened in the last probably, 10, 20 years. People really hid again behind their, I guess I'll use the word ego, or their position, or their title. Yes. And it wasn't, I remember I did an interview with another colleague, a medical doctor, and she was really shocked that I came out, if you will, especially with bipolar disorder. She was like, that's unheard of. No one, almost like it wasn't recommended, from her perspective. And I was like, interesting.
What are you doing, Chris? Really?
Yeah. Like, that's career suicide, in a way, from her perspective. So, and listen, that wasn't easy for me. I mean, I hid that piece. I had no problem telling people that I'd had depression or anxiety. I had, I was fairly open about the suicide piece, but the bipolar piece, no way. No way, Jose. I wasn't talking about that to nobody. Yeah.
How did you manage that stigma and move through it? I mean, like you mentioned, you felt like you had a mask on for most of the time when you were kind of growing up, and especially after being diagnosed with bipolar. And this is something that all of us have to some extent. We all have some kind of mask on. What was it that had you finally realize, okay, let me take this mask off, at least to a certain extent, to write this book?
Yeah, I have to say, it really, it's fairly recent too, right? That I've been public about the bipolar piece. Although there were, I'm sure, because I had had episodes that I'm sure people may have known. But I think for me, it was really just being tired of hiding and feeling like, also that I feel like, and this is a differing belief than you'll probably get elsewhere, but for me, I feel like if I was to draw a graph, at the bottom of the graph, in the middle of the graph is quote unquote normal, the bottom of the graph is suicide, and the top of the graph is mania. Mm-hmm. And I feel like from the bottom to the top, from suicide to mania, that's the full range of human experience. It's not always comfortable to be at the bottom or at the top, but to call it a problem and that you're not normal, I also don't think is helpful for people. So for me, it was a shifting to accept that this is the full range. Not everybody experiences the full range, but it's something that you can learn from and manage. And it doesn't mean that you're flawed. That was one piece of it. And then the other piece of it was, because I had so much shame and stigma, I didn't acknowledge, love, or accept the bipolar piece, mostly the mania piece. Depression, I was often a welcome friend, and I was comfortable with depression. But I went to this conference, and this one speaker, his name is Jeff Foster, and he basically said, so insert whatever condition you want. So anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, whatever. It doesn't want to be healed. It wants to be held. So it wants to be loved and accepted by you. You're its home. You can ride that wave. So you're the ocean. You can ride the wave, whatever the wave may be, but it will all fall back into you. So up until that point for me, I was still pushing away. So it's a very subtle yet impactful shift to move from pushing to accepting, denying to owning. And so that's what helped me write the book, was because up until that moment, I was still didn't want it. I didn't want to own it. I didn't want anything to do with it. Yeah.
that's such a crucial piece, especially even going back to, you know, that what you were saying about reading Marianne Williamson's words around love. And I found that really touching as you were reading that. I was really moved. Again, that idea of love and how that can be challenging for us to really embrace mm-hmm. that true self-love and that true self-acceptance, because there are things about ourselves that we do want to hide because we think that they're wrong, or they make us weak, or we don't think we'll be accepted, we don't think we'll be loved. And so we try and fix it or hide it or, you know, pretend it's not there, instead of, like you said, really owning it, really accepting that you are who you are. You're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. But there are aspects about you that you can still love and that may need a little bit of support in order to have you really be successful in your life and really be able to live out your purpose and what you're here to do in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to understand that you're with you longer than anyone's going to be with you, right? And so we want to get this relationship right with ourselves. And I know I marched through the world for many decades at war with myself, often driven by this faulty core belief that I wasn't wanted, right? So it's been a real process of inquiry and, you know, unwiring and rewiring and acceptance and understanding and compassion to get to this point. You know, and I wonder, like, I haven't had a manic episode for, 2008, I believe, was the last. So I can't do the math in my head. So that's coming up to, 2022, we're almost at, hey? Yeah. So 14 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's been quite a while now. So, you know, I wonder, I don't like to hang, because I get asked this question, oh, are you healed? Are you cured? Right. And it's like, you know, I usually just say, well, for today, we have to just live one day at a time. And I hope, you know, if I am, great. If not, well, then that's the wave that we'll ride when the time comes, you know.
That's a huge measure of non-attachment, Chris, to, and because of that uncertainty of who knows what tomorrow or the next day or next month or next year will bring, a lot of us, maybe even including me, aren't necessarily fully comfortable with really embracing that uncertainty and who knows what will happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should qualify. I mean, there are definitely things I do to make sure that I maintain my health, right?
Oh, yes. That's absolutely important. That's important.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you know, one of those first really big factors that you tackled and addressed for yourself was diet and nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to keep on top of that, to have your brain functioning and for you to feel regulated and to be able to, again, enjoy life and do what you want to do is incredibly key. It's definitely something that we've talked about multiple times on the podcast. And, you know, who knows, maybe even in the show notes, I'll link to a few of our past episodes on nutrition too. What do you find? Do you find, again, that is a huge touchstone for you to maintain your health?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So basically what I like to explain is there's, like, as you talked about in the introduction, in terms of these sort of four components, if you will, to us as human beings, right? There's the physical, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, and our Western system's focused on that physical level. And one of the things we want to understand about that, especially with mental health, is there's three macro systems in your body. So you have your neurotransmitters, you have your neuroendocrine or hormonal system, and then you have your organs of detoxification, and I'll include the immune system because of the fact that we're in a pandemic. So we want to make sure we mention, we know that there's an immune system.
That's important too.
Yes. So, but the foundation to support that physical level, one of the key things, key pillars is nutrition. And this was really impactful for me. I'd been on and off antidepressants for I'd say 15 years. And every time I went off of them, I would end up right back in that pit of depression and suicide. And so for me, it was really frustrating because it's like, it's not really fixing anything. And so that's when I went to see, it was actually a nutritionally oriented psychiatrist that I went to see, and he put me on a bunch of supplements, tons of supplements. And, but I took them faithfully. And that's when I was saying to you, you know, I had that first year where I was free from depression and anxiety. But fast forward to naturopathic school, we had to analyze our diets and in nutrition. And the only essential amino acid I was deficient in was tryptophan. And tryptophan goes on in the body to make serotonin. And no one had ever asked me what I was eating. And I had been a vegetarian, but there were hardly any vegetables in my vegetarian diet. Like I was mostly a sugartarian and a carbitarian. Like I had a lot of cracks in my nutritional foundation. And I remember I had this eating disorder too, which was also lurking in the background. So that was really eye-opening to me. And I really want to mention this because I think a lot of naturopathic doctors do this, and I'm guilty of it as well, is we will put in these supplements, but people will get better, but if they don't change the diet when they go off the supplements, or they don't change something else perhaps in their life, they may end up falling back down. So it's really important to get that nutrition piece correct.
For sure. Who was it that coined the phrase, you can't out-supplement a crappy diet?
I don't remember, but
like that is such a key thing to remember, because we can think that we are, you know, taking different vitamins, different nutrients that are really helpful. But yeah, I mean, we're eating multiple times a day. And if you're not getting good nutrient dense food that is providing the real essentials, like tryptophan, like omega-3 fatty acids, mm-hmm. you know, those kind, we don't think about our nutritional landscape, you know, right now as something, you know, that has deficiencies, because there is such abundance around us of mm-hmm. food and choices. Many of us don't have a problem with filling our shelves or filling our fridge with food. But what is it in that food? Are we getting what we really need? Are we getting the fuel that our bodies really need? Mm-hmm. And that's a huge piece, especially that idea of that building block. Tryptophan, such a key building block mm-hmm. for your body and your brain to function properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and there's the other one that's really important too is phenylalanine, which goes on to make dopamine. So dopamine is also another important neurotransmitter that is involved in depression too, but also, you know, attention. You see it a lot with ADHD. So we cannot really lose sight of the importance of the nutritional piece. And I think I like this quote by Michael Pollan. He says that, you know, we've sacrificed in the last decade or more 2 hours a day for screen time. But what have we given up? And not, you know, in his view, we've given up cooking and exercise. So those, you know, this is, we've sort of gotten off a little bit off track, and I think in society. And so a lot of people are eating out, and there's a lot of convenience foods, and they're not really, don't usually have your nutritional health at heart.
Yeah. And there's a lot of sitting on the couch watching Netflix mm-hmm. and not necessarily a lot of getting outside moving our bodies and being physically active throughout the day. A lot That's of right. us, you know, are sitting at desks throughout the day as well.
Yeah. Yeah. A little tip, if anyone's still, you know, having to work from home, one thing that a patient said to me, which I thought was brilliant, was he used to have a half an hour commute, but now working from home, there's no commute, but he commutes. He just gets up and he goes for a walk. And so, and I thought that was great because that was an opportunity for him to use that time productively for himself. He was used to, you know, his body was in that rhythm of getting up at that time already. So I thought that was a really great way to take a positive spin on it.
That's brilliant. That's really brilliant. Another piece that really stood out for me when you were sharing your story in Beyond the Label was what was going on when you were having real highs and lows in your life and thinking about the stressors and the stress in your life and what you were taking on, especially with when you were describing that last manic episode when you were a mother and you were building a business and all of these other pieces that you were taking on, especially looking at how all of us can support our mental health as moms when we're dealing with kids and other obligations and a lot of things on our plate. I wonder, you know, what you find to be some of the key factors to allow you to manage being a great mom without wearing yourself down or getting to a place that you really don't want to be mentally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So two factors, well, three really. So one is the sleep piece. That's just critical. And I also know it's almost hypocritical for me to say this to a new mom.
Yeah.
Because it's really can be really challenging. And so the important point is in that you do as best as you can in that time frame. But that particular episode was marked by an inability to give up breastfeeding. So my son wasn't able to take a bottle, or I should rephrase that. I wasn't able to let my son take a bottle. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he could have taken a bottle if I had given enough space for him to do so, but I had a very hard time tolerating crying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like, you know, alarms going off in my body. And so that was really makes it challenging for moms, because then you are it, right? You become the food source. And so in these last, you know, these later years for me, like my son's now 15, but the sleep piece is really, really important. And so again, doing your best is what we can ask, especially in these first 3-4 years of our children's lives until they, you know, hopefully can. But you can do things, I think, you know, to support your children to sleep well.
And, oh, yes, I definitely need to. That's something that I've absolutely taken on for my daughter, who wasn't an easy sleeper. And so that's definitely work that I've done, because I totally agree with you. Sleep for me, absolute number one.
Yeah. And if your kids are waking up a lot, then let's figure out why. And let's help them get them to sleep, then you can sleep. So that's important. And then the other piece is looking at that plate and looking at your commitments and learning how to say no, or learning how to say,
oh my God, really?
Yeah. You know, learning how to say, thank you so much for asking me. I'm just not able to do that at this moment. So a lot of people are recovering people pleasers, and we say yes when we really mean no. And that's what makes our lives difficult, because we then get more on our plate than we can manage at times. And it's learning how to recognize when you're like, what your overload point is, when you've put too much on your plate. And so it's different for everyone. But it's really important to manage this piece for yourself. And because you are going to get asked to do things and you are going to want to step up, but you always want to figure out, well, what's the reasoning behind your yes? Like, why are you saying yes? Is it something you're trying to prove? Is it someone you're trying to impress? Is it like, what's the reasoning behind the yes? I'm not saying never to say yes, but we want to really tune into our own heart and to our sense of our soul and our spirit versus being driven from an ego perspective and honoring what our intuition perhaps wants for us versus what it might look good to whoever on an ego level if we do A, B, C, or D.
And in saying that, in terms of looking at what you say yes and you say no to, I think a huge piece of that is also looking at expectations and our own expectations and what we think other people's expectations are for ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and really being clear, right? Being clear in your communication is really important, and it's kind to you and it's kind to them if you can get clear, because a lot of it times it's these, you know, uncommunicated expectations that become a source of conflict or confusion or disappointment for people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Assumptions, right? And assuming that that's what you need to do as a mom or, as a partner in your relationship, or, you know, wherever you are at work, to really look at, yeah, what you're assuming those expectations are, instead of really laying them out and making them clear so that you can choose what makes sense and what doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we may have to do things that aren't a clear yes for us, but we might have to do it. But as long as you have awareness as to why you're doing it, and then you're not going to build resentment, right?
Yeah.
And that's a really important piece, because we can get resentful. But the problem is, resentment is a cue, is a red flag to you that you're not managing your boundaries properly. So look and actually turn to it as a friend in a sense, because it's telling you something.
For sure. And it's not a bad thing. It's just something to listen to.
That's right. Yeah.
What I really love about your book, and towards the end, you have some myths around mental illness that you really address. And I think it'd be really great to address some of those right now for people who may be thinking, oh, okay, you know, there's this idea of again, the stigma and what's involved with mental illness, but really making sure that we're really clear about what mental health issues actually mean for each person. I think the first one that I had really listed, and I don't know if it's the first one you listed in your book, is the idea of, if you have a mental illness, you should not have children because mm-hmm. of the genetic piece. Or I even, you know, not only just the genetic piece, but that, how could you handle that responsibility of being a mother if you have a mental illness, if you have something like bipolar? Mm-hmm. Some people may think that and really believe that to be the case.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do believe that to be the case. And so all these myths came from things people said to me over the years, doctors or whoever. So that's where they all came from. And I think it's, I mean, this is an important piece, and it might be a bit weighty, but we want to understand that everything that we say to someone impacts them, goes in somehow. And then we make meaning of that. And then we use that to either condemn ourselves or to, you know, support ourselves. And so this genetic piece, I mentioned that I'm adopted. So time I would have a struggle, I would ask the doctor, you know, or my psychiatrist, why is this happening to me? Why am I experiencing this? And the answer I always got was, it's genetic. There's nothing you can do about it, Chris. All you can do is take this medication for the rest of your life. That's your solution. And so for me, I felt like that was hard to prove because I couldn't look to my left or my right to verify the truth. And so that's why I think this newer theory that has come out about epigenetics is interesting. That so, yeah, genes load the gun, but lifestyle pulls that trigger. And so if you are somebody who has depression or anxiety or even bipolar disorder, I really think that you can, if you adopt this understanding of this turning the light on or off piece, you may or may not have a gene for whatever condition you may have, but it's really the environment that turns it on or not. And so if you can change your environment from not only from the nutritional side, but the who you're in contact with, the quality of the air and the food and the water that you consume, you can make changes, I think, to this genetic expression. So I look at my son, and even yesterday, actually, I said to my husband, I don't know, like, he doesn't show any signs of anything, except for being, you know, he's very happy and well adjusted, and I'm super grateful. But I have to say, there is a part of me that's on guard, wondering, you know, is this going to happen to him? Did I impart, you know, did I impart something? But I'm really hoping that the environment that he's been in will override that piece. So that's kind of where that one came from.
Yeah. That's huge. That environment, the environment that we provide for ourselves, the influences that we allow in physically and emotionally as well. So key. And, you know, this goes to kind of another myth as well that you mentioned in terms of looking at creating mental health issues because of poor mental hygiene or bad psychological habits, negative thought patterns, that piece. I mean, in your book, you describe the work that you did to really shift thought patterns. And there's definitely a fine, I think that I find for myself, there's a fine line between really recognizing that we do create our thoughts and we can impact that, our thought patterns, without blaming someone for, that's why you have this issue, that's why you're depressed, that's why you have bipolar disease. What are your thoughts on that? Because again, obviously that myth came out from being heard or hearing that and being told that yourself.
Yeah. So I, you know, you've heard sort of this, the idea of the glass is half empty, the glass is half full. What's your view of that? And for me, it was like, I don't even have a glass. Where's my glass? There's no water in it and I can't find my glass. So my point in making that is that I was very negative, within my head. This inner critic had the stage and was really hard to take at times. So learning to navigate my mind so that I'm not at the mercy, so learning to manage my mind and my thoughts so that I'm not at the mercy of them has been a really key step. And it's important to understand that this isn't about Pollyanna-ing over things. It can take time to shift these, but when you're able to understand this psychoneuroimmunology piece, which basically means that your thoughts affect your physiology. So this was coined in the 80s by Candace Pert, who wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion. And what we want to understand is that your thoughts actually do create neuropeptides. And then these are chemicals that can affect the hormones that get produced in the body, which in turn can affect how you feel. And we have two branches to our nervous system, sympathetic and parasympathetic. And so we're other words to describe these would be, so inner critic, inner cheerleader, suffering or supporting, hurting or helping, ego, soul, fear, love. And a lot of people, when they're thinking really negative thoughts, you know, you're pushing your body into a sympathetic state. So it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg problem that we have here, because your thoughts affect that physiology piece. So if we can just stay neutral and learn to recognize, okay, what is the nature of the thought I'm thinking? Where does this thought leave me? Is this thought hurting me, or is it actually helping me? And if it's on along the lines of hurting, then we want to say, ask if we can set it down, because it's of this, because of this cascade that can happen from a hormonal perspective. So it's also important to understand and to work with someone to help you, a counselor, psychologist, where these thoughts have originated from. A lot of people have trauma in their background, and they can be big T trauma, but can also be like little T trauma. But it's important to not just sort to gloss over that step, because it's not just simply enough in my mind to, you know, like just snap out of it and just think positive. I am saying, though, that we really need to critically examine, almost like you're a surgeon, you know, to surgically examine your thoughts with a really, really stern and thoughtful and disciplined action with our mind, because otherwise it can really lead you into places that you might not want to go.
That's key. And also to really examine those thoughts without judgment, without that thought that, oh, because I'm thinking these thoughts, there's something wrong with me, or I'm weak, or I'm wrong, or these thoughts are wrong. Mm-hmm. But really not being attached to
That's right.
what those thoughts mean to a certain extent.
To a certain extent, I think initially it's just important to be like, almost, you can be curious if you want, like, oh, huh, wonder where that's coming from. Curious, but not attached. Mm-hmm. So just like, okay, well, there's that thought again. Huh. Okay. Well, you have a choice though. Then you decide, well, am I going to follow that train of thought, or am I going to just park the bus right there and stay into the, get, you know, and then move into the present moment with the breath. And then when the next thought comes around, what's the nature of that thought? Right. Mm-hmm. I'd say for me, one of the most important things I've learned how to do. And I'm not always perfect at it, right? I can be swirling sometimes before I get to the recognition part of, oh boy, boy, I've really been swirling in that for a few minutes here. Okay. Is this really helping me right now? Usually it's not.
And I think especially in the beginning of that kind of examination, that's where having someone to really guide you, like a psychologist, like a counselor, even, you know, a naturopathic doctor or other professional who has that the training and the skills to be able to help you through that, mm-hmm. is really key, because that's a lot of work to do on your own.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And I talk about in the book, like there's a few steps, right? So there's the first step is recognizing your thoughts and then refraining from following them by relaxing into the breath. And it's important to understand that not every thought, like most thoughts, when we examine them under the lens of truth, aren't actually true. Especially these ones that you're thinking about yourself, right? They're not actually true. There's really no validity to them, but yet they're there. And so the question then becomes, well, what's the purpose of these thoughts? And sometimes I think the purpose of these these thoughts is to teach you to learn how to think a different way.
That's a really key spin, a really important spin to look at. You know, again, why? The whole why behind it. Why? Why do we have these thoughts? Because, you know, it's not just unique to you or unique to me, but there are some commonalities, you know, in the kind of collective humanity of, you know, different shades of these kind of ideas that we take on, and especially in childhood, where we have different interpretations of what's going on around us and what happens to us, especially, I mean, you know, you're in your experience with being adopted and kind of how you felt about that and what you decided about that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, our egoic mind is there to, it's there to protect you, but oftentimes it's based in fear, and which then can actually contribute to our own suffering. Mm-hmm. And so it's learning to, you know, recognize these pieces is important, and understand too that you know, we all form beliefs, right? We've all formed beliefs and judgments and opinions on based on what happens to us. And so, but sometimes they're not correct, you know? So it's really being able to, you know, to critically examine these pieces of the puzzle for, and it's really individual, right? My subconscious beliefs and shadow beliefs will be different perhaps than yours. So and it takes time to figure these out.
Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, for me, one of the last myths that you write about in your book is that myth that mental health issues are negative, completely negative, and there's no gift in them. There's no positive to them. But just with, you know, what you're describing in terms of being able to really listen, take that cue so that you can start to question and learn and grow and shift. But also that idea of perhaps that was there as a way to protect yourself or get through a certain experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I know for me that there was, so one thing we want to understand perhaps is that with depression, right, it's a very inward journey. And so sometimes it's a matter of learning who to listen to within your own sense of self. So what I mean is, for me, I wanted to leave my job for many years before I actually did make this career change. And I felt every time that I wanted to take that step, I felt like I couldn't take that step. And I was in a state of depression for much of that time when I was contemplating this. And I felt like depression was like I was being pulled or called by two different voices. So this soul voice within me, and then this egoic voice, which is sort of the societal voice, if you will, or the voice of my parents, or, you know, people sort of telling me what I'm supposed to be doing versus listening to my own wisdom. And so I got sort of stuck. And depression can also be, to me, when that happens, it's like it's calling you home to you. And so it's a different way to look at it. Then it's a big, huge problem. I mean, yes, I get that it can be a problem for sure. But sometimes it's because you're meant to make a move in a different direction.
I love that idea. And again, really seeing that gift and that ability to use, you know, what is looked upon just culturally in society as a real problem, as something to fix, instead to really examine it and look at it as just a part of who you are, and how, again, you can really shift things to work for you, and to be able to know that you have the ability to make the steps to shift what's going on in your body, what's going on in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's so many springboard, like so many places to start. Right. And I know the hardest part with depression is the starting piece. And so this is where, you know, enlisting people to help is important. And I know, again, that might be difficult because you don't want to reach out, but just know that there are many pieces to this mental health puzzle, and it's multifactorial. And sometimes working on one is all you need. And sometimes working on two or three at a time it's a cumulative effect. But I think the important point to understand is that there is help there and there are solutions available. And it's just a matter of digging really deep, especially if you're really struggling right now, if you're listening, and reaching out, because it's to me, it's just, you're here for a reason, and you just have to continue this process of inquiry and building on this love for yourself piece.
Mm, so true. So now, if someone is out there ready to take a first step, or even thinking about taking a first step, how would they be able to connect with you and see, you know, what kind of information, or even be able to get a hold of your book to again, make those kind of first steps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the books are available on Chapters and Amazon, or in the United States, Barnes and Noble. And then my website, so just drchristinabjorndal.com. That's probably a good place to start. Yeah.
Great. Great. I'll definitely will have that link to your website in your show notes. So then I'm sure from there, it'll be a hub to see all of the different information and avenues that you share with people to really provide those resources.
Yeah.
Awesome. So are you ready to switch gears now?
Sure. Dr. Yeah, we were like kind of heavy. Sorry. This is not a light episode. Oh, well.
that's totally fine. I mean, I think it's so important to be able to be comfortable to get into some of the heaviness. And like, this is what life is, right?
Yeah.
So let's look at what would be, now, do you have a mama must have that you think our listeners should be aware of, something, you know, you think every mom needs or would be great for them to have?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. I think every mom needs to learn good boundaries.
Oh,
right. So boom, really, yes. Learning your, you know, how to say, you know, don't say yes when you really mean no. So learn to listen to that and practice that and cultivate that.
Ooh, I like that yourself. A lot. I like that a lot. I have two mama must-haves for this week. Number one, your book, Beyond the Label. I think it has an important place on a lot of bookshelves out there. So there you go. And I think, you know, a mama must have that I've talked about before, that is just, again, simple, something that we even just kind of touched on, is getting outside, going for a walk, getting that fresh air, moving your body. It's definitely something I love to do, even if it's a simple walk around my neighborhood, to get in touch with and experience nature, especially even just in the city, can really shift my emotional state and how I'm feeling. And sometimes it's no problem. And I just like, sure, I recognize it, put the shoes on, get outside. And sometimes I don't. And I really recognize afterwards where it's like, oh yeah, could have really used some fresh air and a little walk there to shift things. So that would be my mama must have too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So let's share some super mom moments and mama mess ups, if you're okay with that, Dr. Chris. I can definitely go first. My super mom moment, I mean, it's a small one. And this weekend, I really decided to give up the idea that I had created of, you know, I'm not good. I'm not creative. I'm not good at like building with blocks with my daughter, with Frankie. She's almost three and a half. She loves building blocks and something that she loves to do with her daddy. And her daddy's really good at it. He's really creative and loves to build things. And so I just had this idea that, oh, that's something she'll do with him and not something that I'll do. But then, you know, he was at work and I was with her, and I just decided, no, I'm just going to dig in and just have some fun with her. So I helped her fit a little lantern inside of, you know, a tower kind of house that she had built with her blocks. And we made a lighthouse, and it was amazing. And so it was just really nice to be able to just give up that limitation that I had and actually really connect and have fun with my daughter in a different way.
And that's great.
Yeah. Now I have a mama mess up. Also, a few days before, I don't even know what was going on, but I was just getting so impatient with Frankie while we were getting ready to go to day home in the morning that I actually like carried her out of the house. She was yelling and crying. It was just really not the way I like to operate, not my best moment. I don't know what had happened. Something was definitely, I feel like it was missing in the routine in that morning of how that morning went. I'm not sure what it was. And there it was. I don't know what the learning opportunity is there, other than just really looking at expectations, you know, the attachment I had to things going a certain way that morning, because it definitely didn't. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I guess mine aren't recent.
that's okay. That's fine.
But I just remember one time my son was talking about superpowers. And so he asked me, Mom, you know, what's your superpower? And I said, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't think I have a superpower. And then he goes to me, I know what it is. And I said, okay, tell me, what is it? And he's like, it's love. Your superpower is love. So I always will remember that conversation, because it was so like, it just melted my heart. So that was a lovely moment.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And then, you know what, the mess up one is similar to your experience. When he was younger there, and I write about this in the book, I would get so angry and like hysterical that we're not like leaving for school on time, like getting out the door. And it was just awful. Like, I didn't like the way I was parting with him. I don't know that he was, it wasn't that he was having a meltdown or anything. I was the one having a meltdown. So that's where I learned. That's when I started to learn about the boundaries. And it's, you know, we all have those times. And I think the thing is, it was all about my issues, that I didn't want to be someone getting my kid to school on time. Because what kind of parent gets their kid to school on time? Right. And I didn't want to be sort of, it was, again, there's all this stuff was happening behind the scenes in my head. I didn't in that moment realize what was triggering it for me. So I think that's a common one that a lot of moms can connect to, is sort of getting the kids out, you know, the door on time. So I talk about that in the book and the steps I took to get on a more solid emotional ground for myself to get that better, between him and I.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Again, another reason to get the book. So thanks so much, Dr. Chris, for joining us. And thank you all of out there for joining us. Again, we'll have links to Dr. Chris's books and info on our show notes. You can visit that and see that at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And that way other perimenopausal mamas will be able to see it even easier. So thanks for joining us, everyone. Stay safe and healthy.